today's daf is daf tet. And what we've been discussing, let me remind you that we're in the middle of an extended sugya over here. And that was, we've established the movement of liens, depending on whether the original owner against whom the lien was made sold in particular order, and whether the second person sold further. Now, if you recall, we had a couple of fascinating situations. In one situation, the standard situation is that we have Nezikin automatically creates a lien against Idit, a Bal Chov automatically creates a lien against Beinonit, and a Ktuvat Isha, or other items, create a lien against Ziburit. Now, if a person sells all of his properties one by one, then we cancel those liens. What happens is that the last property sold is the one that you can come and collect from. Mashain Kane, and if so, the rule would be, last one out, first one collected. The one before that, next one collected, and so on. And yet we had an interesting case where if you sold to one person, and you sell to that one person all the fields, then even if the fields are sold one day, the next day, and the third day, what happens is that that person always has an interesting option, that he can prevent the collection of idit by simply saying, if you don't accept the beinonit that I'm going to give you, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to return the shtar of the ziburit to the original owner, and then you're going to be stuck with ziburit. And so therefore he can say, I don't care about the technicalities of the rule, I can always subvert the rule by giving you a worse deal. So I'm ready to make you a deal you can't refuse. And indeed, you can't refuse it. And in that case, we wouldn't say the rule of the last left, even if the last left was idit. We wouldn't say that. And in any event that he would be able to return the shtar for ziburit, he can always act against anyone's collecting idit, unless, of course, there's nothing left to collect after we've already collected the beinonit and the ziburit. Now, there's also another fascinating case that we had, and that case also relates to a person who bought one, two, three on separate days, and he ends up owning all of the property. In that case, even where he doesn't have the option of returning, let's say that the guy who sold it to him is now deceased, and it's not going to help him to return to the Yorshim, because now the lien holders won't be able to collect from the Yorshim. He has now another fascinating taina, which is that the halacha, that we move the liens over to the last remaining property in the hands of the original owner, who is now the seller, that halacha is only made to protect the buyer. If a buyer wants to opt out of that takana, he can. And in this case, it's obviously to his advantage to opt out, because he's the only buyer. So what good does it do him to leave the liens all on the last remaining property when he himself bought the last remaining property? And so if the last remaining property was idit, he's very smart to say, look, I want to opt out, and you don't have a right to collect from the idit just because it was the last lien, because the last lien was only the last lien, since the Rabbanim were trying to protect the buyer. But in this case, the buyer says, no deal. Another fascinating halacha. It gets more fascinating, because yesterday, the last thing that we learned is that even if now that buyer goes and sells out that last piece of property, and he gives it now to another buyer. So now we have buyer two. So now buyer one has some of the property. Buyer two has the other property, and he's got the buyer two's got the idit, which was the last thing that there was a lien on. Now, in that case, why would we say that we should subvert the lien? On the contrary, buyer two should be the one who's going to have to pay everything. And by the way, let us recall that the whole halacha of changing over the structure of liens is only nogea, where we're talking about movement of the field from the original owner, who was the one that had the liens against him, to a buyer. But if that first buyer sells to a second buyer, the second buyer sells to a third buyer, and so on, there are no dinim that change the structure of the liens. There's no thing that's put in place to protect a buyer, a second buyer, from liens against an original seller just because the smart aleck first buyer thought that he was going to be able to get off the liens by selling it to the second buyer. So we say, so let's protect the second buyer. We don't protect the second buyer from a first buyer. We protect any buyer from the liens of the person against whom the liens were created, not against the buyer of those liens. Therefore, in this case, you would think that if buyer A sells to buyer B the idit, and that idit was the thing that was the last property that was sold from the original owner, who was the guy that had the liens against him, that buyer B would be stuck with those liens. And we had a fantastic chiddush yesterday by Rava, which is that all sales include all initial legal rights that could have been utilized. Now, in the event that the original buyer would have kept the idit field. We know perfectly well that he's not an idiot and that he would have opted out of the takana to protect him, to prevent people coming after his idit. Therefore, when he sold to buyer B, he sold that right too. And in the same way that the first buyer now could protect his idit from anybody collecting and force them to collect from the ziburit and the beninit, so too, amazingly, can the second buyer, as an abstract legal principle. Obviously, it doesn't help him. He can't say, I opt out. Ah, you opt out. It was the takana for the other guy. But that's not the point. He purchased that right from the other guy. And if the first guy had it, then the second guy takes the result of it, even though it won't help him to have it, obviously. Okay? Fascinating principle. All right. Now, if that's clear, then we can proceed on today's interesting new applications and new insights in this area. So, we got up to yesterday, Daf Chet Amud Beis. Doesn't help to see Aaron's head on his arms in an act of absolute despair. No. It would help to see a big smile, an optimistic mien, a happy demeanor. It's getting worse by the moment. Okay, we got up to Omar Rava, which is, it's about four lines down from the middle of the page. So Omar Rava, Reuven Shemacha, Kol Sedotav L'Shimon. How about a case where Reuven sells everything that he's got to Shimon? So now Shimon, as we said yesterday, he takes the place of Reuven. Now Shimon comes along now, and he sells one of those fields to Levi. Now comes along a Baal Chov of Reuven. He has a right to go either to buyer A or to buyer B, as he wishes. So Ratzah Mizegoveh, Ratzah Mizegoveh. And again, the idea over here is, even though normally what we say is, you cannot collect from Nechasim Meshu'ubadim, meaning Nechasim that have been sold to somebody else, as long as there's free property available, that principle is only meant, you cannot collect from the person who created the debt if there's property that's free from someone to whom he had sold. But once he sold all the property, like in this case, all of the property is called Meshu'ubadim. And then it doesn't make any difference who you go to, whether you go to buyer one or you go to buyer two. But this is only where there is one other thing. That is that the property that you're collecting from has the equivalent lien of property that was left behind. Now, obviously, if for some reason the essential lien was against the property that's in the hands of buyer A, then you cannot collect from buyer B. So what would that mean? Velo Amran ela dezavin beinonit. This is only, remember, he's a Baal Chov. So he now is a creditor. Creditor collects from beinonit. So if now buyer B bought the beinonit, so then he can collect from buyer B, but remember that he always has the right of collecting from buyer A, because we said before, you cannot tell a creditor, I'm only going to allow you to collect from beinonit and not from ziburit. Why not? Because that's part of the din of shalotin al delet bifnei lovin, as we had earlier, because then the guy says, if I would have kept my money, I could have bought whatever I want, because I was dumb enough to lend it to you. So now you're telling me that I'm holding you over a barrel and I'm not going to sell you the ziburit? That's absurd. So remember that actually he still has rights to collect the ziburit from A, not the idit. But if buyer B has beinonit and buyer A has ziburit, he can go and he collect from either of them. But furthermore, vafilu zavan beinonit, even if buyer B bought beinonit, nami lo amar, he cannot collect from buyer B only if ela doshir beinonit kavatek. If he didn't leave behind beinonit that was similar to the beinonit that he bought. So then he could say, well, look, you got the beinonit, that's where the lien was, I want it. So in that case, lo matziyamele inachti lakam makom legabe Shimon. So then Levi cannot say, Levi who's buyer B, cannot say, look, I left behind beinonit because I didn't want you coming after me. So you go after Shimon, because he's the first one that bought. Aval shir beinonit dekavate. If, however, he left behind the equivalent type of property, Gabi Shimon, then lo gavimine. Then we cannot collect from Levi. The Matzi Amarle inachti lecha makom ligvot bimenu. He can tell him, look, I left you property that was unencumbered by this sale to me in order to collect from. Now, based on what I told you previously, these words don't make any sense. There's no such thing as I left you property behind. Correct? Because those words are only said when you're talking to somebody who is the one against whom the debts are being called. So then you can say, there's a law in place that protects buyers, and therefore you go and collect from him. And if you want to collect my property, I tell you, Look, buddy, when I bought this property, your lien flipped off of this property onto the property I left behind. But those words don't apply to this case where we're talking about buyer B, who's claiming that he should go back to buyer A, because there's no such rule. All the properties are already encumbered by sales, you see. So they're all called mishu'ubadim. So Tosfos says the language is indeed misleading, because this language has no legal validity in this case. The main point that this is based on is the previous point of Rava, which is, what does buyer A sell to buyer B? All legal rights that he has. Could buyer A have told this creditor, look, I like this piece of property. You're going to collect from another equivalent piece of property, which is also Beinoni. Could he say that? Absolutely. You can't force him to give you a particular Beinoni. You can only demand collection for Beinoni. So in the same way that buyer A could have said, I don't want to give you this property, buyer B bought that right from buyer A.
He said, I don't want to give you this property.
Exactly. Because there's another piece of property that is its full legal equivalent that you can collect from. So even though he puts it this way, he's only putting it this way as a borrowed terminology. But the ruling is based on the fact that Rava said that you can always utilize whatever claims by whatever legal rights buyer A would have had. And in this case, buyer B is essentially applying that ruling, except he's using the words that he would have used against Reuven. He's using them against Shimon. And they're not really useful the way that he's saying, you see? Because you're right, but it's because of the fact that we understand that if buyer A wants to sell, then he has to sell the primary rights. I'm not going to buy from you where you're going to leave me. If I leave you in power, then I'm the one that's going to lose. So obviously we understand that if I'm going to buy something that you took risks on, you keep taking those risks. I'm not interested in coming into your place and having you leave me out in the cold. So therefore he has these rights. Furthermore, even if he bought the Beinonit, so again, let's see that inside. Afilu zavan Beinonit, nami lo amran, ela delo shir Beinonit kavate, delo matzi omer lehi nachti lecha makom ligvot, it's legabe Shimon. Ava shir Beinonit kavate legabe Shimon, then lo gavim ine, because then Levi can say, matzi omer lehi nachti lecha makom ligvot mimenu. Fine. Next case. V'yomer Abaye. Reuven shebachar sadeh leShimon ba'achrayut. In a standard case. Standard case is that when someone sells a piece of property, as part of the sale, he's providing title insurance. You don't have to buy title insurance from anybody else. So unless it's specified in the sale, this sale does not include achrayut. Achrayut is title insurance. Title insurance covers any and all claims against the property, either by someone who claims it was his property and it was sold by this guy who didn't really have legal rights to it, or a claim that there was a pre-existing lien, or that the property was mortgaged, or whatever the case is. That's called achrayut. The seller is responsible, in that case, for replacing the guy's property or giving his money back. In a case, however, so where he goes in and he buys it with achrayut, comes along now the Baal Chov, the Reuven, a creditor of the original seller, Reuven, comes along to the buyer, Shimon, and he gets this property in court, v'toraf b'Shimon. So now he's attempting to recover his putative property because he had a lien against it from before the sale to Shimon. The din is that Reuven could show up in court and prove to him, sue him now, for getting the property back. And he can't turn to Reuven and say, hey, buddy, I don't know who you are.
Shimon.
No, the creditor can't say to Reuven, what are you doing here? I collected in court from Shimon. This is none of your business. Of course, he says, it is my business. Normally, you can tell someone who sues you that is not directly involved in a suit, this is none of your business, I don't have to respond to your suit. But in this case, you can't do that. Because Reuven tells him, look, if you take the field from Shimon, because of the fact that I provided insurance on the field, I'm going to be the one that ends up paying. And therefore, you can't tell an insurance company, you're not a party to this suit. Of course I'm a party to this suit. I'm the one that's going to end up paying. And therefore, he can bring any rayas. Tosfos says this will be very nogea in cases. Normally, it isn't very nogea. Why? Because the rule is that the court will anyway apply any and all possible tainas that would have been to the schut of Shimon, even though he doesn't know about it. He's a newcomer. He's saying, I don't know anything about this. I just bought it. So, but it will make a tremendous difference in cases where, for instance, the court gives you 30 days to present any and all documents that could prove your rights to this, which is very common. That's called raya achrona. So we give you a chance to bring your final proofs. Anything that you bring afterwards, we have a right to ignore in court. But if Reuven shows up afterwards, and it wasn't a party to the 30-day limit, so then he can reopen the proceedings by resuing them. Okay, so there will be cases where this is very dogia. What's more? So let's just see that inside. Yomalei, ima fakta minei, alai hadar. If you're going to get it from him, from Shimon, it's going to come back to me in the end. So the buck stops here, and therefore I'm the one that can sue. Others disagree with Abaye, and they say, ikri amri, afilu shelo b'achrayut. Even if he's not providing the insurance on the property, he still has a right to sue. Why? The Yomalei, lo nechali, the tavi Shimon, tar omet alai. He can say, it's all very nice that legally you're saying I don't have to pay anything because I sold Shimon a thing without insurance. So it's Shimon's problem, not your problem. But ultimately, who's the guy that's looked at as the phony that sold the Brooklyn Bridge? It's me. I don't want people to be saying that. I don't want the buyer to come back to me and call me a lousy phony who sold him a field that he wasn't supposed to sell out. And therefore, for that alone, I have rights to come into court. Furthermore, says Abaye, V'yomer Abaye, Reuven shebacharsa deli shemot shelo ba'achrayot. Suppose you specify in the contract that there is no insurance that's being provided for this sale. V'yatsu alea asikim. And sure enough, right on schedule, there's a suit that claims that the field belongs to me, not to Reuven who sold it to you. So the din is, atchelo yechzikba, so long as the buyer had not actually taken possession of the field, he could say, forget about it, yochol lachzorbo, and demand his money back because it's not in his possession. But Mishir Zikba, once he took possession, in Yacholach Zorbo, he can't go and give it back to the guy and say, forget about it. I don't want the field. My timer. Because at that point, the Amarle, the guy can tell him, did you ever have a real estate bubble? Bubbles are also called balloons. Well, what you bought was a bag full of hot air. If you were stupid enough to buy a field in which I specified there's no title insurance, so you figured you're getting a good deal, you'll take your chances. Well, you took your chances, and you bought now a hot air balloon. Enjoy it. So chayta de kitre, you bought a sealed bag of hot air. Savarta, that's what you thought you were buying. Viki balta, that's what you got. Just like what you thought. When we say taking possession, me'ematai havi chazaka, what is that moment of taking possession? Michidayish amatzer. Even something as simple as walking along the edges of the field to mark it out so that you know exactly where the area is. You've got a surveyor there showing you exactly. That's taking possession already. V'davka shelo b'achrayut. But this is only if there was no insurance. Avo b'achrayut. If anyway there's insurance. So you tell the guy, listen here, I'm not interested in going through all of this. But this guy's going to come. He's going to take the thing. Then I'm going to come and come back to you. Then I'm going to have to sue you for my money back. Forget it. I don't want to take possession. I don't want you to keep my money. Just give me my money back. Let's forget the whole thing. Some say, however, even if he does have achrayut, he can say to you, what do you mean you don't want to go through it? All I provided was insurance. Now, do you have the court order that allows this guy to take the field from you that you're presenting to me as an insurance claim? No? Well, buddy, when you do, come back. Because I never told you that this is a rose garden. All I did was promise you a refund of your money if the court took it from you. As long as the court doesn't take it from you, leave me out of this. So therefore, you're saying, but the guy is here. The guy is here. Tomorrow, next year, however long it takes, you'll bring me your receipts, and I'll give you your money back. So therefore, some say, show me the court order, and I'll pay you. But just because this guy looks scary, therefore, you want to change your mind. You know how many people come up with false claims? I'm telling you, I own the field. You trusted me. So you'll have a little service in court. Don't worry about it. In the end, you'll see. You'll keep the field. Don't tell me you don't feel like going through it. Ravuna, getting back to the original question. The original question was, we have a serious contradiction. On the one hand, we're told you can only collect. You can only pay a guy with metav, the best. And on the other hand, we learn out from Yashiv that you could pay afilu subi, any junk. So we had all kinds of approaches to that. The most recent approach that we had, and this is what we've been talking the whole time about how to define metav and so on, was that actually all things are considered to be metav as long as they can be sold on eBay and shipped, because you can always find a buyer. The only thing that's not considered to be ipso facto metav is real estate, because you can't ship it. So it's only with real estate that the Torah is makvid on metav. Everything else is metav, by definition. And that explained why it says metav sadeu, as opposed to the kesev yashiv, right? Ravuna's got a better idea, he says. I say, you have a choice. So kesev yashiv leba'alav, that's if you're paying cash. Or metav, if you're paying property. Note that if you're paying anything but cash, he doesn't have a solution, which is, of course, what Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna. I understand. The point over here is that we've got a problem with the word yashiv. We said that yashiv was coming to be marbe shavet kesef. So you're telling me it's either cash, ulevi, it's either cash or real estate. Well, it says that it's not cash or real estate, that it could be even pork bellies. So what are you telling me, that it's kesef or meta? Well, says Rav Huna, that's talking about Achmalayaskinim, but Aletlay. The guy doesn't have any cash, doesn't have any real estate. I understand. Well, obviously, if he doesn't have anything, I mean, I'll pay pork bellies. I mean, what kind of chiddush is that? Either let like pshita, I need a posik to tell me that, well, if you want to be paid, take what he's given you. Thank you very much. No, silly. Of course, there's a tremendous difference. Because ma'od the table, look, you would say, the guy wants to pay you with these pork bellies. You tell him, okay, thank you very much. You go sell him and bring me the cash. I'm not interested in taking possession now of 300 tons of pork bellies. They do this, you know, if you don't pay up your, yeah. So, in that case, I might have thought that ma'od the table, I realize, zil tarach zov invite the kesef. You go and sell and bring me the cash. So, in this case, comes along the parent to tell me a big finish. I could pay you cash, and I have to pay you cash if I have cash. Or I could pay you absolutely the best property if I have real estate. And if I don't, I can even pay you shavet kesef, and it's not up to me to turn it into kesef. Now, the Rabbi Yotam says, this is only, you know, tashlumi nezikin. When it comes to payment of other cheshbonot that are due, either because of a lender, you can't tell a lender that. That's all part of the karpan ha'mishra. There you're going to have to pay. Not only that, if you owe money to somebody who's done a job for you, so you go to a garage, the guy fixes your car. Now you say, you know what, keep the car. You can't tell him keep the car. You have to pay him. And if you want to tell him keep the car, you go sell the car and bring him the cash. So this halacha is dafka, says Rabbi Natan, binogea the dinim of nezikin, not as a rule to pay anybody you owe money to. Omer Ravasi says something that sounds exactly like what Rav Huna just said, but if he would have, it would have said v'chein Omer Ravasi. And it doesn't say v'chein Omer Ravasi. So Ravasi said, k'sofim arayin kakarka, cash is the same as real estate. It's a rather cryptic statement. I mean, l'mayokot, vis-a-vis what is cash the same as real estate? I mean, ilay v'lenin meitav, are you trying to say that that's the solution to the meitav problem? In other words, what Rav Huna said? So then it should have said, v'chein Omer Ravasi, ayin Rav Huna. Rav Huna just said that. So it can't be that that's what he was referring to. He's got to be referring to an interesting case where indeed it would be significant whether you have cash or you have real estate. Now, where would that be? I'll tell you. Fascinating. Two brothers inherit an estate that consists of bank accounts, bonds, land, and so on and so forth. Okay? Now, the thing is, one of the brothers, he takes the cash, the bonds, the other brother takes the real estate. Okay. What's interesting here is that the real estate carries the liens against it. Cash doesn't. So now, there were shnei achim, shechalku, they split an estate. Natal echad karka, one of them takes just the real estate, v'echad ksefim, one of them takes his portion in cash. Comes along the Baal Chov, somebody now presents a contract against the father, and he collects the real estate. So there you're saying, Ravasi, that, well, cash is the same as real estate. The ozel, hi, v'shokal palga b'ksefim ba'adeh. He can come back now to his brother and he can say, look, bro, you know, I mean, it was against the estate. I mean, you give me half of your cash, so at least we're even Steven. Well, I mean, I need Rav Asi to tell me that. Pshita. High brother, high low brother. Well, he is a son, and this guy's not a son. I mean, we're paying from the estate. If we're paying from the estate, each one of them is supposed to be paying the debt of the father from the estate. Or, either it's pshita, or it's wrong. Ikiri Amri, others say it's wrong. Because Adarabba, Le'idach Yisa, the Omar Le, the one who took Ksafim, says, now look, you know perfectly well that there's advantages to taking cash and there's advantages to taking real estate. There's disadvantages to taking cash. There's disadvantages to taking real estate. After all, cash is a mirage. I took the cash, I took my chances on the mirage. I mean, somebody could have walked in here, walked off with the cash. Or it could have been turned out the next day it isn't worth anything. So, okay, I took my chances. Now, you took the real estate. Nobody's going to steal it from you. But on the other hand, might also be a mirage. Maybe there was some kind of lien against it. So we each took our chances, and you lost. So I took the money, understanding the imagnave. If somebody's going to steal this money, obviously I'm going to come back to you and say, oh, bro, somebody stole the money. Give me half of your property. You'd left me out of court.
Why is it obvious that one is the responsibility of the holder of the money, the other is...
Because the lien is always against property. You can't create a lien against money.
Right, no, but it was the father's lien, and this is his... He's making the argument that your mistake has lost you the money by someone stealing it, so it's...
No, we're never making that argument. I'm just pointing out to you, you were very happy for me to take the cash. Okay, why? Because you know perfectly well, if anything happens to that cash, you're out of it, right? I can't come back to you and say, oh, something terrible happened. Last night someone walked off with all the cash, so now I'll take half of the property. That's a joke.
But well, if there was a flood, and the flood flooded the land, he can't come back and say,
correct.
Flooded the land.
That's right. That's right. So this is like a flood, flooding the land. You took a chance at, okay, those are the two sides. Those are the two sides. That's true. Those are the two sides. I mean, obviously, there's a lot behind this in terms of understanding the nature of a lien against an estate.
It just seems very weak argument.
It depends. It depends where the need to pay is coming from. The first side, which you're arguing for, sees the need to pay as something that the holders of an estate are responsible for. The other side sees the lien as something that exists as an actual problem in the property, rather than something that's against an estate that somebody needs to respond to. Take the estate out of it. Take the identity of the owners of the estate out of it. The lien works against the property. And therefore, it's irrelevant for you to come back to me and say, but we shared the estate, didn't we?
If the money was fake.
Right.
If it's fake money, it's not real. Like
counterfeit money. I understand that.
No.
Again, we can get into this for a long time, okay. But I understand your question. It's an excellent question. But this is why Bobakam is so much fun to learn outside of Adafium. You know. All right. So I took money, accepting the risks of Geneva, and Laki Shakal Ta'ara, and you took property with the understanding, Dimitrafa, if somebody comes up against it, Lo Mishtama Lachmi Dimina, you're not going to come to me to replace your risk-taking. So either it's wrong or it's trivial. Okay. Ela, so therefore what he must have meant, Rabasi, when he said cash and property is the same, is a different case. Two brothers split. Okay. Now, comes along a Balchov, and he takes one of the brother's property. You're not the same case. One takes cash, one takes property. They both take the property. No cash. Fine. How did it happen that he was able to take one brother's property and not the other brother's property? That's already legal details. It could be. There's such a thing called an apoteke, which Tosfos suggests maybe the way that it worked over the year, which is when you created the lien, you gave him rights of first collection against one particular field as opposed to the other one. He wanted that field in case he wouldn't pay. Whatever. But it happened that he collected from one brother and not from the other brother. Now, what happens is over here that we're saying, well, if that case, you can pay half of what happened with cash. You don't have to say, let's do the whole thing over again, take this piece of property because it's all that's left of the estate now that this guy collected, and we'll resplit. The other brother can say, look, I like the field that I got. You lost your field. I understand that that's not fair, and I'm going to have to pay you. I don't have to pay you property. I can pay you cash. And that would be what Rabasi is saying. Problem is, if that's the case, Rabasi already said that in a different way. Ask the Gemara if that's what it means. Ha'omer Rabasi chodazimna. Rabasi said that once. Here's the case. Deitma. Achim shechoku. Brothers split. Property. Rav amar batla bachloket. Rav says, the entire split is canceled. They split over. Shmuel Amar Viter. Shmuel says, tough luck. And you don't get anything back. Ravasi Omar, Nota Ravia Bekarka, Ravia Bema'ot. What you do is you get, now there's two ways of understanding this, either as an and or as an or. Now let's take Rashi's first shot. Rashi's first shot is or. You pay him back 25% of the value of your own piece of land that wasn't taken by the Vekuach, by the Balchov, and you can give him that 25% either in cash or in property. Why it's 25%, we'll see in a moment. But right now, the essential point that we're looking at is, you see that you can pay cash or property, and cash is as good as property. If that's what Rabasi is referring to, then he already said it. Now, what's the logic behind the positions? So that's a different issue. Let's look at that. Rav amar batla machloket. Why? Kasavar achim shechoku ki yorshim hava. Rav says that in a case where two brothers split an estate, they do not change their status into buyers. In other words, we don't look at it as if the two strangers, I sold you, my rights in that piece of land in exchange for your rights in this piece of land, and therefore the fact that we happen to be related is irrelevant. We're simply two strangers, legally, who went along and made a deal. Rav says, no, that's not the case. They remain heirs of an estate. And since they remain heirs of an estate, by the way, there's all kinds of other things in the Sabino Gea, would you have to cancel the whole thing in Shemitah? I mean, in Yovel, right? Comes along now Yovel. 50 years later, one brother says, well, you know, we made a deal, but you know, deals are all canceled. I bought that piece of property from you. The other brother says, what do you mean, bought? Who bought? We inherited the property. No, we inherited the whole property. So there's a question also. Are they Yorshim or are they Lekuchot? So Rav says the estate still maintains its name of estate. These are the two owners of the estate, and now they each have their piece. But if the estate now is suddenly declined because someone walks off with half of it, then now there are two owners of a diminished estate. And now they have to split again. That's Rav's reasoning. So Bat Lamachlokes. Shmuel says, Viter. Shmuel says, it's all over. Why? Because over Akim Shechoku, Lekuchot. He holds, basically, they are buyers. So you'll say, so what? A buyer sells with title insurance? No. They're like buyers without title insurance. Lekuach, Sheloba Achrayut. Because that's part of the understanding. Everybody knows that they're taking risks and splitting their estate in this fashion. And they want to get out of each other's hair. They really don't want to get out of each other's hair. They want the other guy out of their hair. But in any event, they're saying, look, I don't want to see you again. I don't want to talk to you again. This is going to be my piece. This is going to be your piece. And let's just keep the peace. And when you do that, so you're like a lakuach without insurance. Therefore, if one guy had the bad luck of being the one who had the apotiki against, so then, too bad. Rabbi Asi says, you can take, again, we're taking the first approach, either one-fourth in karka or one-fourth in ma'ot. Now, what's his problem? Well, first of all, he says, misafkale. He's not sure whether these have a din of Yorshim. If they had a din of Yorshim, then he's got a right to half the property, right? Like Rav said. But if they have a din of Lekuchot, he's got a right to nothing. So therefore, and is there ever going to be a way of proving this? No. It's a theoretical problem. Therefore, where you have Mamon that's Mutal B'Safek, you don't really have any way to prove. What we do is we split it. And if we split it, instead of his giving back 50% of what he's got, which will now make the two brothers even, Stephen, he gives back only 25% of what he's got. And that 25%, he can give him cash if he wants. Now, that is the equivalent of saying Kesev Areo Kekarka, which you were trying to say is what Rav Asi meant, but Rav Asi already said this once. Now, let's start at the beginning and try the other approach. What's wrong with this approach? What's wrong with this approach is, as Tosis points out, how does the Gemara know that Rav Asi's problem is he's not sure whether the brothers are considered to be Lekuchot or Yorshim? It's just as easy to say that he's not sure whether the brothers are like Lekuchot with a insurance, Achrayot, or whether they're Lekuchot without insurance. You're jumping to a conclusion for no reason at all. You have no data as to what Rav Asi holds. Since the Gemara takes that for granted, it's obvious that the case is more complex than the way you're looking at it, because the Gemara is putting in the question of actual Lekuchot. Therefore, we have another approach that handles that problem. In this second approach, what Rav Asi meant was, you pay 25% in cash and 25% in the actual property. Because if they were like Yorshim, you'd have to give actual property. But I can't prove that you're Yorshim. So if they were like Yorshim, you'd get 50% back. Since I can't prove that, you'll only get 25% back in actual real estate. As far as the other 25% is concerned, the guy can say, look, here is cash. But I want the property. Well, if you want the property, then prove that we're Yorshim. Because if we're only buyers, then we're buyers like buyers with insurance. If I owe you an insurance policy, obviously I can pay you cash. I don't have to pay you property, do I? And that would explain why we say the problem is I'm not certain whether like Lekuchos with Achrayut or they're Yorshim. Therefore, I give 25% in property, 25% in cash. Because this is not a resolvable issue, and it's Mamon Hamutal B'Safek. Therefore, the din is everybody get half of what they'd like to get. Okay. Ela Mayarein Kekarka. Okay, so now what does it mean? Ela Mayarein Kekarka. What did Rav Asi mean when he said money is like real estate? He meant Le'inyan Meitav, which is essentially what Rav Huna said. That if you've got cash, you pay cash. If you're paying real estate, you pay the very best. That's what Rav Huna said. Yes, the Gemara Yochi, I knew the Rav Huna. Says the Gemara, you're right. We'll have to change this into not Omer Rav Asi, but rather Vechein Omer Rav Asi. Rav Asi, too, agreed. Omer Ebzera, Omer Ravuna. Once we're talking about percentages here and Ravunas, I just want to throw in a curveball. My curveball is the mitzvah ad shlish. When you're talking about a mitzvah, you're talking about up to a third. What? What are you talking about? Ilei meshlish beito, do you mean in order to buy an etrog, you have to pay one-third of your assets? Is that what you mean? I mean, so in other words, if you got three mitzvahs to handle all in one day, you can kiss it all goodbye. Is that what you're trying to say? If you've got three mitzvot, so now, give away all your assets for these three mitzvot. And I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me, obviously, it doesn't mean one-third of the original amount. It means one-third of what's left. So that, basically, as Zeno pointed out, you'll never give away all of your estate. But it's still ridiculous, says Tosfos. It's still ridiculous, because we know that you don't give that much for a mitzvah. I mean, you're basically going to end up with nothing. You're telling me, I don't want to be a turtle. Okay. So, Ella, I can't mean that. Ella, I'm representing, you know what it means? It means you had money to buy an Esrog. So fine. Now all of a sudden you're about to hand over the money, and there's the old Etrog bait and switch. You know the Etrog bait and switch? The guy says, wait, you sure you want that Etrog? I got something under the counter that's much nicer.
Behind the curtain.
So there he is. So he takes out this beautiful Etrog, and this Etrog, I mean, come on, you can't resist it. I mean, it's got these shiny fenders and the chrome and the stereo system and the whole business. You don't want that stripped down etrog. You want this beautiful new shiny etrog. Well, it's only 80% more than that etrog. No, so the deal is, don't look at the nicer etrog unless it's within one third of the price of the lower class etrog. That's the point. So when you're talking about yidur mitzvah, somebody's got yet a better mitzvah, a better sefer Torah, whatever it is. So pay up to one-third more. Boy, Ravashi, how do we figure a third? Because, you've got to make sure that you understand the sign. Is the 50% off, does that mean 50% off of the price that it is now, or that after you buy it and pay the full price, in other words, one-third could mean one-third of the final total, which includes the third. Or it could mean one-third. If that's the case, then one-third is really a half. Because after I take the half, I now have three halves. I add one-third. So originally it was 100. Take an additional one-third, meaning 50, and I have 350s. I paid one-third. So that's called a shlish milabar, meaning out of the total. Or it could mean a shlish milagav. I take 33 and a third, take that off and add it. Now, what do you mean? So shlish milagav or shlish milabar? Take it. You're going to have to struggle with that all on your own to decide which etrog you want. B'ma'arava amre mishmei the Rebbe Zera. Back in the Yerushalmi, you know what they say. That what Rabbi Zera said, he didn't say, don't look at the better etrog. He just said, ad shlish mishalom, up to one-third more, that you're going to be paying out of your own pocket. But if you pay more than that for the nicer etrog, you're paying out of God's pocket. So if you're going to do that, mikan ve'elach mishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to get back what it is that you paid in this world as well, and of course, HaKaren Kayemet lo lo lam haba, and you'll still be able to eat the profits of that investment in the world to come. Now here is a Mishnah that is about as cryptic as a Mishnah can get, both in its choice of language and in what it is it's trying to say. Very weird. Kol shechafti b'shmirato, hiksharti et nisko. Wherever I was the one that was responsible for watching something, it is I who made or who made it possible for that damage to occur. And what's more, hiksharti b'miktzat nisko. If I was partially the one who made the damage. So this damage was partially put into place because of my negligence. Then I am the one who has to make up in the payment of the damage as if I were the one who had created the entire problem in the first place. You have to know that I need to fulfill certain things before I'm going to be responsible. The damage had to be done to objects that there was no me'ila against, meaning they did not belong to Hegdash. But if they belong to Hegdash, then their misuse would have entailed the penalty of Me'ila. Well, we already know Hegdash is not considered to be part of the Dinim of Nezikin because of Re'eu. Furthermore, Nechasim Shein Shel B'nei Brit, when we're discussing payment as proposed above, if it's owned by other members of the Brito Shel Avraham Avinu, so that they're all part of the society that we're structuring. Furthermore, the property needs to be Nechasim HaMiyuchadim. It needs to be property that has a clear owner and not property that is basically hefker. Uva chol makom, And that damage could have taken place in any location other than a reshut amyuchedet lamazik, unless it was a place that was owned specifically and no one else had rights to come in by the one who was damaging. So in other words, somebody comes into my yard without permission and my dog goes and attacks them. That's his problem. That's not my problem. Nobody told him to come into my yard. And a reshut of the nizik and the mazik, whatever that means. Doesn't mean reshut rabin. Doesn't mean it's a private property, but both of us have rights to that private property, all to be seen in the Gemara. And the rule is, kishi yizik, chava mazik v'shalem, tashlum e nezek, v'mei tava aret. Where such damage does take place, and it fits the bill. There's a long bill here that it's got to fit. It's got to be that I was negligent, at least to the point of being responsible partially for this event taking place. It's got to be that it took place in an area that did not belong to the Nizik and the Mazik, and certainly did not belong to the Mazik. And it's got to be that the property against which it occurred was clearly owned by somebody. And it's got to be that that guy was Jewish. And it's got to be that he wasn't owned by Hagdish, and now just being a Gizbar or something. Well, if all of those things are true, then pay. Omar Rav, Ruven Shemocha Kol Zidotav L'Shimon, V'alach Shimon Amachar Sadeh Achat Levi, Uba Balchov De Ruven, Rotsumi Zegove, Rotsumi Zegove. Velo Amran, Elodazavin Beirunit, Avazavan Idit Viziburit Lo, Yomale, Lohochi Daike Vizavni Idit Viziburit, Ara Dolo Kazia Lacha, Afilo Zavan Zibainunit Namilo Amran, Elodolo Shir Beirunit, the Kavate, Avashir Beirunit, the Kavate Gabi Shimon, Logavimine. The Matzi Omalei Nachti Lechamakom Negvot Mimenu. Omer Abaye, Ruven Shemachar Sado Shimon Ba'achrayut. Viata Ba'alchov de Ruven Vitaraf Mishimon. Dinohu, the Ozil Ruven, Umishtoi Dinabade. Velo Matzi Omalei, who are you? La Baldor de Diat. The Omalei, Imafakta Mine, Alai Hadar. Vikide Amri Afil Shalom Ba'achrayut Nami. The Omalei, Domalei, Lo Nechali. The Tahavil Shimon, Tar Omet Alai. The Omer Abaye, Ruven Shemachar Sadel Shimon, Shaloba Chrayut. The Yatsu Alavasikin, Achlo Yzik Ba Yocholach Zorbo, Mir Shirzik Ba Yocholach Zorbo, my timer. The Omalai, Haiti the Katri, Savarta the Kibalta. The Imatayavi Kazakan, Hidayesh Amatse. The Dafka Shaloba Chrayut, Abo Bachrayut Lo. The Igri Amri Afilu Bachrayut Nami. The Amalei Achvei Tirpacha Vashalaim Lacha. Ravuna Amar O Kesev O Meita. Etvei Renachvun Ravuna Yashiv L'Rabot Shavet Kesev Afilu Sudin. Achlamayaskin Bidaletle Idaletle Pshita. Ma'adate Ma'amin Alei Zil Tarak V'Zavin V'Aitele Kesev. Kamash Bala. Om Ravasi. Ksafim Areim Kikarka. L'may Yogata. Ilei Mele Inyin Meita V'Hayo De Ravuna. Ella, the Shnei Achim Shechoku, Vinatal Achat Karka, Vechat Ksafim, Ubaba Alchov, Vinatal Karka, the Ozil Hai, Vishokel Palga Biksafim, Vade, Pshita, I Brova, I Lavro. Ikere Amri Adarab, it's not even true. Leinach Gisa, the Omarle Lohaki Shakli Ksafim, the Imagneve Lomish Salam Laminach, Lohaki Shakal Tahara, the Imitrafa, Lomish Salam Lalachom, Idi, Minoi. Ella, the Shnei Achim, Shechoku ubab alchov and natal chalko shalachad mehem. But Amar Rav Razi Chorazimna. Ditma achim shechoku ubab alchov and natal chalko shalachad mehem. Rav amar batla machloket. Shmuel amar viter. Rav Asi amar noto ravia bekarka. Ravia bemaot. Rav amar batla machloket kasava achim shechoku ki yorshimim. Shmuel amar viter kasava achim shechoku lekuchot. Ukelokech shalo bachrayut dami. Rav Asi Omer Noto, Ravia Bekarka, Ravia Bema'ot, Misavkele, Iki Yorshin Damo, Iki Lechucho Damo, Hilkach, Noto Ravia Bekarka, Ravia Bema'ot, or Ravia Bekarka, or Ravia Bema'ot, depending on which pshat we take. Elamai Areim Kikarka, Le'inyin Meita, Yochi Haino de Ravuna, Ema V'chein Omer Rav Asi. Omer Abizera, Omer Avuna, Mitzvah Atshlish, my Shlish, Ilav Shlish Beito, Elamiyata Yisramele, Tlata Mitzvata, Leitev Lekule Beite, El Omer Abizera, Behidr Mitzvah Atshlish, Be Mitzvah, Boy Ravashi, Shlish Milagav, or Shlish Milabar, Teiku. B'ma'arov amri mishmeid Rebbe Zeira, ad shlish mishalo, mikan ve'elech, mishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu.